Somebody call a doctor. I think I'm going to crash. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelich.
As always, it's great to be back with you in the studio and here on the radio.
Yeah, it is a fine time to be here, Chuck, because here we are. We're just about 30 days out from the election. And usually, as a veteran of these things, I understand that what usually happens in that final 30 days is, well, I guess you could almost call it akin to insanity. Insanity on the parts of many people who are otherwise rational. First and foremost, the candidates themselves. Secondly, many of their hangers-on within the parties. And thirdly, because it is a viral type of insanity, it spreads out to the general populace. It's almost, Chuck, if you can, you could almost feel the change in the tone, in the behavior, in the urgency people have when you're getting within 30 days of an election. Now, that is exacerbated, obviously, because of the stakes of the election. You know, people don't get worked up if it's an election for dog catcher. They might get a little bit more worked up if it's maybe county commissioner. Maybe we get slightly more worked up for a state house or senate race. Definitely get more worked up in a congressional race. But where we save our best insanity is for the once every 4 years presidential race. And this cycle is no exception. As a matter of fact, no. This may actually be setting a new gold standard for insanity in this election. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today, over the next couple of days, actually, is some of the, well, shall we say, more broadly defined, broadly cast ideas around this election. And one of the ones that you picked out, and we were going to take a look at from, it was from yesterday's news in the Chicago Tribune, was an article by Eric Zorn, who I'm taking from reading his column, Chuck, is fairly liberal. And so what he's done in his change of subject column, he's written a little piece that he calls Obama Derangement Syndrome. Now, Chuck, you want to share with us a little bit what ODS is?
Well, Obama derangement syndrome is obviously, you can see it all around you if you're paying attention and you're not in the throes of it at the moment. It is basically taking a look at Barack Obama's record and actually believing that Mitt Romney is going to do something different or better than what Barack Obama has been doing. Now, this author that we're talking about out of the Chicago Tribune is not surprisingly does not share our particular view of what Obama derangement syndrome is. It's like two psychiatrists fighting over the definition of a psychiatric disorder.
Well, what I was going to say, Chuck, is I believe that there are two different strains of this particular viral derangement. One is the liberal version of Obama derangement syndrome, and the other is the conservative version of Obama derangement syndrome.
And that's a very good, very astute observation, because what is happening in this article is the liberal version, wherein we see sentences like, Obama is the first president in close to 50 years to oversee the passage of major health care reform.
Now, that's
Obama's first president in about 35 years to oversee the passage of major health care reform, because it's not constitutional.
That's right. Well, you know, and we'll have to be honest, there have been presidents before Obama who have tinkered with health care. That's how we got third party payer systems. You know, that's how we got managed care. That's how we got, well,
Medicare.
Socialism. That's how we got Medicare, Medicaid. The list goes on and on for the ways that the federal government has tinkered in a area that they have no constitutional authority to be tinkering in. But because the general public, i.e. the voters, aren't constitutionally as literate as they should be, and that's usually what happens with diseases, Chuck, is that if you have a populace that isn't especially well-versed on preventative measures like the Constitution, you end up with these diseases. And ODS is just kind of a later virulent version of all the other diseases that have ravaged the body politic in this presidential cycle.
Well, absolutely. And where we see it on the right is we're seeing so many of our friends. I mean, you and I see this because we're not committed to any particular candidate or party, and for good reason, because none of them right now. I would say that you and I both take the same look at things and say there is a threshold. There is a criteria for people to gain, at least I'll put it in my words, and we'll see if you agree. There is a threshold and a criteria for people to earn my vote.
No, I agree with that, because that's the whole point. And that's the reason why you have campaigns, is because the candidates understand that as well. They understand that they have to earn votes. Now, our big problem, Chuck, it seems, is that there's many people out there, maybe the candidates themselves, definitely a number of their handlers and hangers-on, and certainly some of their more virulent supporters that have a different view on that, that they believe that, you know, we have to earn the privilege of voting for their candidate the other way around. But that's the reason why we spend hundreds of millions that, well, not we, the Policy Institute doesn't have that kind of money, but that's the reason why candidates spend hundreds of millions of dollars with the slick postcards and oversized mailers and letters and packages that you get in your mail almost ad infinitum, ad nauseum, on the television ads that are, well, from this point forward, that's the reason why I call this is the insanity period. You can't turn on a television, flip on a radio, open a print media newspaper anywhere in this country without being assaulted by candidates either spinning their record into distortion to make themselves look good, or spinning their opponent's record into distortion to make them look bad. And honestly, Chuck, it's that whole idea that, you know, it's how do you tell an effective lie? You mix it with a little bit of truth. And that's kind of the way this works. But with Obama derangement syndrome, it's all lie all the time.
Well, let's be clear about something. It would be difficult to twist Barack Obama's record to the point where he would look good.
Oh, I don't know. I've heard some liberal pundits out there who've been trying their level best to do just exactly that. And I really honestly think Eric Zorn was really, in some ways, even though I don't think he could, honestly, with any kind of conscience whatsoever, bring himself totally to that level. But basically he's saying here, well, and he qualifies it. I want to go back to this for just a second. He says, I'm not saying there aren't reasons to support Romney over Obama and not reasons to be disappointed in Obama. I'm not hoping conservatives and Republicans will embrace Obamacare and the Recovery Act, but I do hold out hope for a little perspective. So he's trying to kind of play a middle ground here.
Sort of. Yeah, I agree. What's gone on, though, and when I made that statement, what I would say is I can't think of a policy decision that Obama has made that I agreed with.
No, well, now, I think I agree with that assessment.
That I couldn't find a constitutional problem with, that I couldn't find an economic problem with, that I couldn't find a social problem with. The fact is, the list goes on and on of my problems with Barack Obama's policy decisions. Here's the problem. Here's where the derangement syndrome comes in. The left says it's all good.
Yes.
And the right says it's the most horrible thing that's ever happened, and we need to elect Mitt Romney, who, in his professional career as a governor in government, has imposed something that looks exactly the same from the governor's seat while he was governor of Massachusetts. In other words, Mitt Romney has demonstrated that he will make virtually the same policy decisions.
Now, Chuck, I can hear right now the howls that are going up and across the freaking plain saying, how can you sit there and say that? You must be one of those perfectionists who's never satisfied with anything. And there are quantifiable ways that candidate is better than that president. But then when you actually press them on quantifiable ways, it's amazing how many of those ways start with, well, Obama has done this. but not the idea of, well, okay, well, let's look at Romney's record. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, we're just saying, honestly, we're saying, please don't set up any idols. That's our point. And we've seen a lot of our good friends, especially in the pro-life, pro-family, socially conservative movement, gathering up a lot of sticks and twigs and building an idol. I hate to say it that way, but honestly, that's exactly what we're seeing. And it's kind of fright because I think, Chuck, number one, it denies the idea of God being in control. How many times I've heard over the last couple, 3 months or even more, we've got to do this. We've got to do that. And I'm thinking to myself, who's the we? You're going to go and cast your vote just like everybody else is. Yes, if you convince enough people to look past the obvious flaws, the obvious similarities, the obvious same focuses in a socialistic manner between the two candidates, sure, you could probably convince enough people to change the regime. But will that actually lead to any type of a improvement in a real sense whatsoever in the body politic? And that's the question that we're asking, isn't it, Chuck?
Well, there won't be any change in the body politic and the way we think until we all basically acknowledge that God is in control of these things. And that's where the problem lies, Barry. I've actually heard conservative Christian leaders talk about this time, well, God didn't intervene this time in order to bring us a candidate that we could all vote for. Now, I'm going to expose my thoughts and feelings about constitutionalism here by saying these are the same people that openly opposed Ron Paul, the only true constitutionalist in the field, although Michelle Bachmann was pretty close. I would disagree with her on a couple of things. I was ready to throw in behind Michelle Bachmann. I would not have had a problem at all supporting Michelle Bachmann. There are, again, policy issues that I disagree with her on. I'm some foreign policy issues and that kind of thing. But those were pretty minor league. So this accusation that I'm looking for the perfect candidate, no. And I have problems with some of Ron Paul's positions as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I think his position on gays and military and homosexual marriage are deeply flawed. However, I was not ready to chuck the baby out with the bathwater. I do have a minimum set of standards that I maintain, and they are biblical standards for a leadership. Now, Michelle Bachmann had a problem in that she was a female. I realize we're going to stir up a hornet's nest with that, but the fact is, biblically, you can say we live in a Deborah age and all that stuff, but the fact is, she's a female. She's really not supposed to be in that position, but occasionally God does choose to use a female when the men refuse to do their jobs. And in fact, we've got that problem right now. The men are not stepping forward, and the women were. I'm sure that our friend John Lofton would give me a major earache over this. But that being said, again, I was a Ron Paul guy. Now, everybody started coming in, what about Rick Santorum? Well, Rick Santorum never saw an increase in the size, cost, or control of government he didn't fall instantly and madly in love with as long as Republican leadership told him he should. He was not a leader. So the fact is, he did not meet the criteria. He was not someone who I could go to reliably and know what he was going to do. I think Michelle Bachmann is. I think Ron Paul is. Mitt Romney, I know exactly what he's going to do, and it's going to be the opposite of what I want to see happen in policy. So why should everyone assume? We get this argument, Barry, that a vote for anybody other than Romney is a de facto vote for Obama. Okay, no, it's not. Well, because the fact is, my vote was not going to go to Mitt Romney in any case. Okay.
Well, I understand that, Chuck. But we want to open that up quite a bit more, and we're probably going to do that on tomorrow's program because I'm not sure, but I think we're running close to out of time, aren't we?
Got about 30 seconds.
Okay. So join us tomorrow because we're going to open this up a lot more and discuss this and hopefully walk you through some areas of logic and biblical worldview on this particular issue.
And join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.